This is Rakovic's After Hours.
Oh hi, and welcome to episode 104 of Rack Addicts After Hours. I hope that if your season was festive, it was festive enough and filled with family fun and friends and things like that that begin with F. I had a strange thought on the way here, a realisation perhaps that might only make sense to people of English persuasion and of a certain generation that isn't mine. I was talking to my dad round the festive period, and he mentioned that they're hiring somebody from France, whose name is Amandine, I think, something like that. But what happened was, as I'm sure you know, does often happen, a word rattles around the inside of your noggin and tries to find sentences to attach itself to, because I knew there was one there. So it was rattling around in my head for a few days before I realised that it's actually, well, the connection in my brain is the Mr. Creosote sketch from The Meaning of Life, the Monty Python film, and the context is John Cleese reading the menu to Mr. Creosote, and there are frog's legs Amandine, and it was incredibly satisfying when I made that connection. What a strange and weird way to open up the podcast. You've got Ben waffling in your ears, and Pete is here, as always. Pete, how have you been?
Not too bad. I'm not waffling.
You're not waffling. Well, I'm waffling and slowly going insane and blindly reaching for my tea, and I found it, and no disasters were had. What have you been up to?
I've been trying to enjoy Christmas as much as it is possible in these strange times. Better than last year.
Excellent. I imagine most people's were.
But still restrained.
Certainly.
Which isn't a bad thing anyway.
Yeah, I like a quiet one. Those are the best ones.
So how was your Christmas?
Similarly, C-word. Slightly shorter than I wanted, but yeah, it was nice.
It was sort of like Christmas always is, like anything that's anticipated to a degree. There's a lot of preemptive anticipation, and then the event arrives, and then it's all over, and it's gone.
All too quickly. It ends for me after the consumption of vast amounts of turkey and no sprouts at all.
You're not a sprout man.
No, like father, like son.
I'm not particularly fond of a sprout.
I did try one 3 years ago, and yeah, it happens every few years. I'll go, yeah, maybe they're better this time. Never happens.
I don't know about you, but to me, there's a slight metallic taste to them, but maybe that's just the way I cook them.
Potentially. There's certainly off tastes, because it's like it started as a cabbage and went wrong somewhere along the way.
Aren't most greens, or a considerable amount of greens of that ilk, all kind of related? They're all from the
cabbage,
same...
Cabbage, lettuce, sprouts.
Yeah.
I assume so. Anyway, what else have you been up to this week, Pete?
Well, I have been enjoying filling the modular, or the new modular case, up with the modules to
it
completion.
It does look rather swish in its all black, although there are some suspicious grey cables there ruining the effect.
Yeah, I ran out of black cables,
oh dear,
and it's Christmas, and it's very hard to order these things at this particular moment. But I unfortunately have run into an issue, which initially perplexed me, but I believe is power related.
Always a gremlin. What happened?
Well, I think that the modules I have, even though it's only two rows of 104 HP, I have exhausted the capabilities of the power supply that I have installed, which is a particularly beefy power supply.
Problems.
Yeah, so the power supply is marginally over 1200 milliamps capable, but I've calculated that the total draw from all the modules is 1900.
That's quite a gap.
Yes.
Oh dear. Oh dear.
So the symptomatic presentation of the problem is that the Queen of Pentacles and the Golden Master compressor limiter, etc., don't initialize properly when you power up.
Weird flashing lights and strange behavior that you don't normally see.
No, they kind of go through a cycle, but they either, with the Golden Master, it either initializes or doesn't.
Yeah.
And with the Queen of Pentacles, it's got a selection of issues depending on how it feels. So
depending on what it wants to do to you today.
It can power up, but the sampling part of it, or the sample playback unit part that triggers about four different samples from the SD card, doesn't initialize at all. So you've got analog drums, the filter section works, the effect section works, but the sample section doesn't work.
Mm.
Or on other occasions, none of it works, or on other occasions, it all works. Now, initially, I thought there was a problem with the module itself, but then when I realized there was two modules behaving strangely, it's too coincidental that two modules have developed a problem. And I also then tried them in different cases and realized they were fine. It has to be a power thing. And as I say, subsequently, I've now done the calculation to realize that the system is drawing too much power. And those particular modules obviously need exactly the right amount of current to initialize properly.
What's the stan? Could you put another of the same power supply in there, run it off the same wall thing?
No, because the power supply is a big, clunky power supply. So the power supply came from my supplier, Clicks and Clocks in Berlin, and is a reproduction of the original Dofer power supply that came in the 9U 84HP Dofer inexpensive case. In fact, it was used right across the Dofer case range until they changed to a switch mode power supply.
This is linear. That's the other one, isn't it?
Yeah. So I've always regarded them as very beefy. In the Moth, which is a substantially larger modular case, there are four of them, but we're powering five rows of 200 HP. But the Endorphins modules, the Ground Control, Queen of Pentacles, and the Golden Master draw the best part of nearly 1,000 milliamps, those three modules.
Is it that digital modules draw more power? Is that the thing?
I would imagine so, because you're having to power up a CPU of some description. Many of the analog ones are very minimally powered.
Yeah, well, I suppose in the earlier days of Eurorack, when it was a lot of analog recreations of things, huge power supplies weren't so much of a necessity.
No, so this is the first time I've encountered this, but it's a bit of a schoolboy error because I should have noted the current draw of all the modules in the design phase and not be finding out right at the end.
Have you got your eyes on something else?
No, this configuration is exactly what I want, so I'm going to have a serious think of how I get around this problem.
I've heard good things about Topper Brillo power supplies, but I don't know how beefy they go.
Yes, the trouble is the whole case is designed around the power supply, and I've always assumed that they were chunky enough, but obviously not.
Yes. Topper Brillo stuff is the same kind of format, so you could just drop it in the back and not have to worry about, an extra 4 HP for a power module or something.
I might have to just make up a special Endorphins case or something, a separate case. So it could just launch me into another frenzied case building.
We'll see. Well, I mean, since you've got your sequencer there, it would be nice to have it right where your hands can get at it unobstructed.
I thought maybe there'd be some other modules in there that I could sacrifice, but unfortunately, because it's my dream case, it's a difficult call.
Tricky.
So watch this space.
We'll catch up.
I'll figure something out. I'm kicking myself a bit. Yes, this is the first time I've ever experienced it, because you were saying that you've had this issue in the past.
Yes, that was a Tip Top Micros use and a bunch of normal draw modules, and then I borrowed a Strymon Magneto from work and the whole thing fell over.
Which again is going to have a process on board because it's a digital pedal or digital module.
Totally.
It does seem that the digital models are the ones that draw the most current.
The culprits. How dare they?
So I'm relieved that the modules aren't faulty in themselves.
That would be a hassle and a half.
But I'm slightly at a loss of how I'm going to navigate around this problem at this time.
Just got to stick a different power supply in it.
Yes, it's not as easy as... And that's quite a big power supply. I'm just trying to think of...
Well, I mean, I don't think it is that big. Because if the power supplies I used are 2 amps on both the positive and negative 12 volt rails, and they're just little 4 HP things, and it's just an external laptop charger thing, I'm sure you can get even bigger, beefier internal similar style ones.
Yeah, I mean, it just shows you that the physical size of the power supply doesn't necessarily relate in any particular way to the amount of current it can actually put out.
Totally. I suppose it's all about the quality and stability in many cases. I have a weekly updatey thing. Finished another sci-fi book after ploughing through Leviathan Wakes. This was The City and the Stars by Arthur C. Clarke. Do you know that one?
No, but was it the one that your sister recommended to
you?
Yes,
it was.
And was it a good recommendation?
Yeah, I enjoyed it. I think I mentioned before that all the Arthur C. Clarke ones tend to be short and digestible and nicely parceled up. So it was one of those. I would recommend searching for some spoiler-free ways to describe it. I won't. If you like sci-fi, read it. You won't regret it. We must have some kind of tradition around here. I've thought of another thing to add. An object that has crossed my path. Have you much experience in the world of titanium?
Not personally.
Neither had I, until this Christmas. Let me backpedal a smidge. In the world of bicycles, in which I enjoy, there's sort of a hierarchy of frame materials. Bike frame materials, that is. All with their respective qualities. Most mid-range bikes, say 500 to sort of 1,000, 1,500, quite likely going to be aluminium or steel. Those will be your two materials. Aluminium a bit lighter, but you need chunkier tubing to get the required strength properties that you need. Steel has that classic look because it's thinner tubing, and a lot of people really like that. You'll have carbon forks turn up, but for a full carbon framed bike, you're talking £1,800 plus. And that's stiff, light, compliant where you want it to be. Apparently, I wouldn't know because I don't have the oodles of cash to own such a thing. Nor do I think I really care, because if you dent it and you compromise the whole structure, the whole thing's kind of gone. But often on the top of the pile comes titanium, because it's super light, relatively thin tubing, corrosion resistant, all these things, but it's miserably expensive, even more than carbon fiber, because it's expensive anyway and it's really difficult to work with welding and things. So I thought to myself, I'm not going to own a titanium bike because they're stupidly expensive and impractical and all that kind of stuff. But titanium is still cool because it's a fancy space age material. So I am now the proud owner of a titanium spork for camping purposes or bike packing purposes, and it's a really weird material. So it's super light compared to aluminium and steel, I think, in terms of, you know, densities and all that. But it has a strange feeling that if you hold it, you'll still know it's metal, because it'll do all the heat conductivity and such. But when you run your hands over it, often the surface finish feels weirdly plasticky, and it's really light, so you still think it's plasticky, but then you kind of flick it with a nail and it sounds like metal, and it's a bit of... It's weird. I'll bring the spork along next time so you can have a feel, because it's very weird.
So when you say spork, we're saying a spoon fork?
A spoon fork. Mostly spoon with some prongs on the end. The multi-purpose eating device.
So why have they gone for titanium? Just to make their products stand out?
Mostly for the titanium sexiness, really. That's kind of it. Yeah, because titanium is cool. That's why. That's the only reason.
So I don't know. Is titanium an alloy, or is it mined?
No, I don't know how it comes out of the ground, but it's definitely an elemental metal, that one.
Okay.
But yes, it's very interesting. I'll bring it along and we can get your impressions.
Of the spork.
Of the spork, the titanium spork. There are people in the sort of camping world that go for their ultralight stuff, spend ludicrous amounts of money shaving grams. Happens in the bike world as well, and titanium is normally the recipe. So, you know those classic military sort of mess tins, this kind of size, with the foldy handle thing? Something like that. Pick that up from an army surplus shop for, a couple of quid or something, fiver, maybe. Titanium, you're looking at hundreds of pounds, and people lap it up. It's a strange world.
Yeah, well, I suppose people like to have that certain something that is only available to a select few.
That they do, yes. We must have some kind of tradition around here in Christmas time, and maybe that is thinking about our favourite bits of gear or purchases over the last year. And I checked mine before we started, and it did sneak in around the end of January this year, so technically 2021. It's the microphone that you're hearing me through. We here at the Rack Addicts headquarters both have Shure SM7Bs. I'm sure you've seen them on many a YouTube-nized podcast. Those classics of the vocal recording world. And they're working well. Cloud-lifted, or Triton Audio FET-headed, the last two episodes. See if you can tell a difference. But I was talking to my partner, actually, about this one today. Many purchases I've made in the past, potentially all of the modular ones, I don't quite know, are a little bit... what was the word I used? Let me find it. Aspirational. Yeah, aspirational. That was the one. I think, ooh, if I buy this, I will be able to do all of these things. And then I don't.
Or don't do the things, or don't buy it.
Well, I'll buy it and then don't do the things and maybe hardly use it. That often happened with modular. But I've been nothing but pleased with the purchase of this microphone, as it does come along with me to most of these podcasts, if I remember. And it's been a workhorse, and I've kind of forgotten about it. But then every so often I just look at it and, oh, I'm satisfied. I'm glad I own you. Those are my thoughts.
Most good acquisitions are generally slow burns. The ones that you get really excited about before or prior to getting them tend to be some of the ones that are a bit of a disappointment when you actually get them. Maybe because you got overexcited about it and it doesn't fulfill the anticipation that it promoted initially.
Like Christmas, maybe. Way to come full circle.
Exactly. For myself, I've had several good acquisitions during 2021. Mm-hmm. Only, I would say, two of them being modular, possibly, although I have purchased quite a few modules. There's only two that really stand out for me, and one is the Stochastic Instrument, and the other one is the Effects Aid.
Oh, Effects Aid. Cool.
And that one, I think, was more significant because I wasn't that aware of it before I got it, and I was quite impressed at it being such a powerful module or effects processor for something of that size. You know, 4 HP, minimal controls, but it's great. Just sounds great, just does everything. The Stochastic Inspiration Generator, yes, but you know, that was a long wait.
I mean,
we're talking what, year and a half,
something like that.
So apart from that, maybe my 20 ounce S-wing hammer that you
what a beauty.
And that's about it. Four particularly notable acquisitions anyway. What about yourself? Anything other than musical equipment?
I was trying to figure out when the coffee grinder turned up. Coffee grinder might not have been this year, so that's the only thing I can think of.
So it's been a thin year for acquisitions in the Ben household.
Yes. Maybe that's a good thing. Maybe it's good for my bank account.
Good for the planet. Less consumption.
Yes. Right. We can move on to some news, because there is some which I didn't really expect. Two things I would like to talk about. Are you familiar, Pete, with Landscape?
No.
They are an electronic instrument manufacturer of strange proportions. They have a section on their website that's just called Why, which I think is quite funny. But they have a new product. But you will probably know Landscape from the All Flesh, the little jack-mounted touch-sensitive-y pad doodads. You may also have seen the HCTT, or human-controlled tape transport.
Yes, I have seen one of those.
So they're responsible for these strange things, and also the Stereo Field and the Sound Witch, which is very affordable and on Thonk. But they've got a new one, which is intriguing. It is a passive analog drum synthesizer. And I will explain why I think that's a bit of an odd name when I play you some of the sounds it makes. So, by passive, it only requires the CV or gate signals used to trigger it or modulate it. Don't need an external power supply, which is kind of a cool idea. It looks colourful and interesting and etched PCB, as most Landscape stuff does, and it has 8 channels, which do strange things. It is called Noon, N-O-O-N, and let me see, have we got a nice nugget of blurb from their website? Okay, this is why, according to Landscape, they decided to make the thing. By using this unique method, that's of a passive machine, we can increase instability and magnify organic aspects of traditional analog electronic instruments. The sound of analog at its core is the sound of sculpted electricity. So they're getting a bit hippie up in here. But let me show you some of the multi-channel sounds that they have available on their website. They're all very strange. This one is called Squinchy. What about Water? Quiet Tapping.
It's all very Richard Devine.
I've not found anything that sounds like a drum machine on here to me. Here's one called Forest Friends.
Not over-friendly, I would say.
Not really. What about... Okay, so they've got little demos of each of the separate channels. This is called Dot. It's rhythmical, probably due to what's triggering the device itself. Balloon Bass. Mm, So potentially marketing it as a drum synthesizer, or a passive analog drum slash synthesizer, in fact, might be a bit misleading. It's kind of just a noise box. Might be quite cool, with many of the stranger end of this sort of vaguely modular synth corner.
How much does it cost, if you know?
Ooh, let's find out. I'm not sure. Precisely. TBD. Amazing. Late January 2022, apparently.
What are their other bits and bobs retailing at normally?
So I would say the Stereo Field and the HCTT are probably the more premium options, so let's find out. The HCTT, which is the cassette tape manual manipulation device thing, $315 from Signal Sounds, $399 from KMR Audio. Stereo Field, same price, pretty much. So I wouldn't be surprised if it's from £300 to £500. I wouldn't.
That's a lot of money for something that bleeps.
That is quite some moolah. What did you say about something that bleeps? Here's another thing that's being released that bleeps. Bastel Instruments, who I do quite like, had a relatively high level of success for a bleep machine with the Soft Pop, which was a breadboard, patch cable, little teeny tiny battery-powered doodad. And now there's a Soft Pop too. Here is the teaser audio. Potentially more usability there, and this one has 3.5mm patch points for Eurorack compatibility. So if you like bleeps and bloops, that might be a better option.
Do you have a number for that
Ooh,
device?
Let's find out. It doesn't look like it. January the 5th, we might have more details. And have you ever been on Bastel's website before?
I don't recall.
It's an unpleasant experience.
Okay, it's sort of style over content.
Instruments. I do still want to get the Castle drum at some point, because I do like the Castle. Soft Pop, no, only discontinued, so we don't know how much the Soft Pop 2 might be. As always, stay tuned, we might let you know. Alas, so ends the era of news, which often happens around this year. When is the NAMM this year, do you know?
It's normally 2 to 3 weeks coming into January, is it not? Something around the 20th, I want to say.
Ah, the Winter NAMM show is happening in June, so never mind.
Okay, have they postponed it then?
It looks like it. 3rd to the 5th of June.
So no, but did they have NAMM last year? I can't remember.
It's all a blur.
Well, I say last year, it's still this year. Did they have NAMM in 2021?
No idea.
I think, did they have a virtual one?
I would imagine it was virtual.
I can't remember.
Who knows then when we'll next see a large batch of releases? Maybe they'll be saved, maybe they'll just kind of turn up in the first half of the year.
The first one was Superbooth, the first trade show to kind of come back.
Yes, into reality.
Yeah, after COVID was that, and I can't think of any others at all.
That's the only one that crossed my radar. What's the other synth one?
The Synthfest.
Yeah. In Sync, lovely. Synthfest, and I don't know when that is normally.
It's around June. I don't know, I'm just making these dates up as I go.
Postponed until 8th of October 2022.
So they really have pushed things back.
Mm.
It's interesting because there's a sort of definitely an air of optimism that these new variants are mild and less impactful. And it's also been suggested that, in fact, if a very virulent, mild version spreads around, as is happening at the moment, it might get the fabled herd immunity going.
Yeah.
And we might be past the worst of this pandemic. But the trouble is, there's always many opinions varying from one extreme to the other. So just have to sort of sit and wait. But it would be nice to get back to some genuine normality, if that's at all possible.
I would like it. Although it is nice always having the Rack Addict normality at one corner of our week. Steady and stoic as we don't feel, but maybe we are.
It'd be strange doing this podcast in times that aren't plague-ridden.
Maybe one day they'll happen. But for now, we must finish our podcast with the standard miscellaneous multimedia recommendation. And for once, I'm prepared and I have one ready to go. I've been watching the new season of The Witcher on Netflix, which came out at some time in the past. If you haven't seen the first season, you're definitely going to want to go back because nothing will make sense. But if you're a fan of the video games at all and you haven't watched it, what are you doing? If you're not a fan of the video games and don't know anything about it at all, think sort of Game of Thrones-y, potentially, if you want some of that kind of vibe, the fantasy setting, but you want it to be good, shots fired, then The Witcher is here for you. I'm only a couple of episodes in, but unfortunately it might be missing something of the first season. Might be the whimsy that was brought by the Bard, but we'll see how we go. I think we should have about 8 episodes left. We'll find out. But The Witcher, season 2, on Netflix. Pete, what have you got for us?
This week, my multimedia recommendation is, again, a YouTube channel. And this one feeds into our like of strange and fine objects. And
ooh, one of my favourites.
The handling of.
Excellent.
To a degree, because, in fact, it's the actual logo of this particular YouTube channel is a white glove, typically used to handle very precious objects.
Gotcha.
So the channel is called Objectivity, and they describe the Objectivity channel as a series of videos about science treasures. In each video, we uncover amazing objects and manuscripts from archives and tell you their stories and discuss them with experts.
Ooh, sounds good. What kind of objects might we be treated to?
A lot of it is significant documentation. Mm-hmm. You know, somebody, a particular famous mathematician's first theorem in their own hand, possibly, or their first publishing of the white paper. My attention was drawn to this channel because the gentleman in question who hosts the channel, who is Antipodean, I want to say. I think he's Australian. I'm sure he's not from New Zealand. I'm getting my accents mixed up here. Anyway, I think the gentleman is Australian, but he seems to work out of London. But he was over in San Francisco at Adam Savage's cave.
Oh, okay.
So it was
I like where this is going.
It was kind of a joint episode in the cave. And he had asked Adam Savage to pick 3 items from his collection that he was particularly fond of and then discuss.
Yeah.
That caught my attention, and hence I dug deeper into the particular channel.
So, no spoilers for that Adam Savage episode, but what other ones have you particularly enjoyed?
Well, a lot of the items, it seems to have a great connection with the Royal Society in London, and they've been collecting items for, well, around about 300 years.
Oh, wow.
So, he works with the archivists there, and they will bring an item out and then fully explain and discuss it.
Lovely stuff.
Nothing particular comes to mind, but it doesn't detract from the quality of this particular channel and the interesting discussion points that are brought up.
Nice one. Objectivity, then. Wonderful. Listeners, thank you, as always, for tuning in. We hope you've had a relaxing bath or whatever you may have been doing while listening to this, and we hope you tune in for the next episode. Farewell.